It's time for Firearm Friday, a podcast dedicated to bringing together the firearm industry and community. Now here's your host, from the great state of Texas, the tactical leprechaun himself, Chris Dover.
TGI up, and welcome to Firearm Friday. I am your host, Chris Dover, and today we're going to have a little conversation with AJ from over at Cedar Mill Fine Firearms. Now, Cedar Mill Fine Firearms makes several different types of firearm cases, but we're also going to talk about some issues that AJ and Cedar Mill has ran into with selling their products over on Amazon. But first, let me tell you about Sportsman's Guide. Sportsman's Guide is the go-to source for all your outdoor needs, whether it's hunting, fishing, camping. They pretty much got you covered while you're there. Don't forget the Buyers Club membership, which will save you even more on the products that you need for your outdoor adventure. All right, this week we welcome AJ into the house. How are you today, AJ?
Oh, I'm doing great, Neil.
I'm doing wonderful. Thanks for asking. Let's just kind of dive into it. I'm curious, with Cedar Mill Firearms, seems like you guys do a lot in the storage and in the gun case sector, as well as some other things. But I always like to start out, what's a little bit of your background, and how did you kind of get started on this journey?
Well, really, it started when I was young. I grew up in Montana on the farm, and I think I was 7, 8 years old when first went gopher hunting and target practicing. So growing up with firearms and hunting and everything has been something that's been part of my life since then. So within that respects, firearm storage has always been a bit difficult, because the Pelican cases, the SKB cases, and all the better firearm cases tended to be more than what I'd pay for my rifle, so it wasn't feasible to purchase a nice firearm case for my hunting rifles, and that started me on this journey of finding affordable rifle and pistol cases that still have the level of protection you would expect to receive from a Pelican or SKB.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. And how long have you been doing this? How long has Cedar Mill been around?
Cedar Mill has been around for probably a decade. Mm-hmm. The firearm aspect of it has been around for 3 years.
Oh, okay.
Now, you want to go back further, it's been more like 6 years, but in that first 3 years, it was basically just a small non-transactional company.
Okay, gotcha. And then the cases, do you guys have people that design those, or do you come up with those designs and how you want those done yourself, or how does all that work?
It's a bit complicated, and I don't want to get into it too deep.
Gotcha.
Some of them are pre-designs, but a lot of them we make modifications to ourselves to suit the needs of our customers.
Gotcha. So customizable is what I'm hearing.
Exactly.
Get that customizable option. Very, yep. Very cool. And y'all cover, of course, rifles, pistols, long guns, handguns, pretty much. Anything that you've got a case need for, you guys pretty much have it covered there, right?
Yep, we do, and we hope to expand here soon into more of the personal defense weapons and a few of the odder size cases that are often hard to find, especially online.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Now, as far as the customization, like pick and pluck foam, where the customer themselves do it, or do you guys do custom cutouts? How does the customization actually work?
Nope, it's all pick and pluck foam. I've looked quite a bit into Pelican cases and stuff, because for the longest time I've wanted to own one. And one of the major downfalls I saw of a lot of the cases out there is they came with one thick layer of pick and pluck foam, which for a rifle was usually too deep and then left you a little protection on the bottom side of the case. So what we've employed with all our cases is a double layer pick and pluck That way, each pick-and-pluck layer is about half the depth of a standard pick-and-pluck single layer. This will allow you to pluck down both layers if you want to do a magazine horizontal or vertical, but it'll allow you to pluck down only a single layer for, say, your firearm or for your scope or something like that. So it allows a much higher degree of customization inside your case.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. Yeah, because I've got a couple cases, and you're right. It's really thick, and there's a very, very small piece of foam in the bottom, but it's nothing like the lid, like the egg crate or whatever in the lid. It's not nearly that thick in the bottom.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we find with our cases. It's really nice to go a single layer for the rifle. That way you have a thick layer on the bottom and top to protect it. But with your magazines, you're not too particular. You can stack them horizontally, get more space out of your case, and you might not have as much protection on the bottom, but then again, they're magazines.
Gotcha. Now, with the with that pick and pluck, I'm assuming you have experience with actually plucking that stuff out, correct?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Just going to ask, what's the method you use for getting the best fit?
Typically, we start with the bulk of the rifle, whether that be the forearm or the stock, depending on the type of rifle, and we pluck out from there. So we'll lay the rifle down, we'll mark out a few spots with credit cards or a thin device that can slip between the layers, and then we'll pluck it out. And then we'll put the rifle back on top, see what we need to modify to get it to fit right. We'll pluck that out. Typically, about a time or two later, we'll be able to put either the fore-end or the stock into the case and then work from that direction towards the other direction, just plucking out the edges and fine-tuning it to the shape we need.
Okay. And that's an interesting concept. I never thought about using that credit card or even... Most people have quite a few business cards laying around.
Business cards were great, too, yeah.
Yeah. I know the times I've done it, I've more or less kind of laid the firearm down. You have to be really careful about orientation, but I would lay it down, flip the foam actually backwards, reverse it, and then lay the firearm down and use a Sharpie, draw it out,
and then
pluck from there. But I kind of like it's kind of like setting tile or something almost. Your idea with the cards, I really like that idea better.
Yeah, no, it works pretty well, and it's pretty accurate. You know, if you set two cards up in a corner that you know need to be plucked out, and you work your way out from there, there's very little room to mess up.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and when you draw that out, you don't necessarily have straight lines. With those cards, you're dealing with those straight lines, which is really, really neat.
Yep. Now, when we first started out, we did do the Sharpie method, and that's the reason we switched, is we found that even though we have this line with a Sharpie, it's difficult to line that up with the pick-and-pluck grid. Mm-hmm. And then if you move the grid, your lines are off, and then things get out of whack really fast.
Now, is the grid... I'm guessing you guys take pretty good care with making sure that grid is square within the case, correct?
Yes. Yep.
Gotcha.
Now, each case should have an identical grid between the two layers so that when you pluck through, it's exactly the same.
Right. Awesome. Yeah, that pick-and-pluck foam is a whole different animal of itself. It's the concept of how that is manufactured and made where it comes apart like that. How do they cut all but just a little bitty bit and then it still stays together is kind of amazing to me how that works.
It is. I kind of like to think of it like a stamp.
Right.
You know, yeah. They're connected, but they're easy to take apart.
Right. Exactly.
Recently we've been experimenting with a different style of pick and pluck. It's called EPE foam for short.
Hmm. Okay.
Some of the complaints we've heard online, not so much by our customers, but just in the general firearms community, is they don't like that open cell foam. Grease gets soaked into it, water gets soaked into it, so on and so forth. So on one of our guitar case, actually, we've just released a closed cell pick and pluck foam. Mm-hmm. So that way you don't have any, it doesn't act like a sponge when it comes in contact with water or oil.
Okay.
But it's also cubed, so you can still pluck it out just like you would the other EPE foams, which are typically I think they're either razor and grill, razor cut or laser cut, depending on how you want to do it.
Sure, sure. So the new style is less porous, I guess, in like a layman's term?
Yep, that'd be a great way to describe it.
Okay. Now with its, you know, it would seem it would be a little more dense. And, of course, we're dealing with foam, and foam's not heavy, but is there much of a weight difference between the two?
A little bit. That's slightly heavier. I mean, on the guitar case, I think we're talking 5 ounces.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Out of 12 pounds.
Right. Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, once you get the rifle, once you get your gear and everything in there, I don't think that's enough to honestly make a difference. So that's interesting.
Yep. Another nice thing about the denser foam is with a firearm, it does tend to protect it better because firearms tend to be heavy.
Yeah.
And with the regular pick and pluck foam, if you've ever used it, there's quite a bit of play in there, and since it's a spongier material, the less porous EPE foam holds your firearm firmer and better in place while right. still adding the protection needed to prevent your scope from going out of zero.
Now, do you guys just use the new stuff, or are y'all playing with that just in the bottom portion of the case, or in the lid portion as well?
No, just in the bottom portion. Okay. That foam isn't really suitable for doing what we call the egg crate.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, it seemed like that would be a... That stuff seems like it's more of a molded type foam of some sort, so...
It kind of comes out in sheets.
Right.
Yep.
Right. Awesome. Now, with the cases that you offer, I'm assuming you offer those that are airline-approved, that sort of thing, or do you...
Yeah, actually, so believe it or not, I used to work for TSA, so that's one of the jobs I had.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, after college. So then I became very acquainted, especially here in Montana, with regulations the airlines have in concerning firearm transportation aboard aircraft. So that was one of the other aspects I came into this business with, is we want a case that people can take with them when they go on safari, when they travel up to Montana to go hunting, a case that'll go through security with the right instructions without a problem.
Right. Gotcha. Now, do you know some of the requirements on cases if somebody's out there looking around?
I do. I have to be careful how I word this. The current requirements is that it needs to be locked.
Right.
And it needs to be locked in such a way that you cannot remove the firearm, period.
Okay.
So that's the very broad regulation they have on firearm cases. Yep. Now, what that comes down to is a lot of cases will have smaller or even like the plano has a cheaper plastic on it. So you can find that with two locks, you can take the latches off on one end, pry the plastic away with your hands, and actually slip the firearm out.
Wow, okay.
And that's one of the things they want to prevent, especially for theft on airlines.
Gotcha. So, I mean, it's got to be, yeah, it's got to lock in such a way, what you're saying, is that, you know, even if you was to pry or take the hinges off or something like that, you couldn't get it out.
You couldn't remove the firearm, exactly, yep.
Right. And I'm guessing on the hinges, I mean, you guys do something special there, I'm assuming, to make sure those can't be removed.
Yeah, they're plastic injection molded with a stainless steel rod through them, typically, depending on which case you're talking about. Right. On the pistol case, they're molded together in such a way that they can only come apart when the case is open.
Okay, gotcha. So you kind of open it up and then slide it off the rod, basically, at that point, is what you're saying.
Yep.
Gotcha. Okay. That's pretty cool. What about you're talking about, you know, the hunters and people like that, so the weather and stuff becomes a concern. What about waterproof, moisture-proof, that sort of stuff?
All our rifle cases, barring the guitar case, have an O-ring seal in them. Mm-hmm. So they're 100% waterproof. I think the IP67 rating allows pressure to be shot in all directions and still maintain a waterproof seal, which is the, I guess, classification that the rifle cases fall in. Now, our best-selling pistol case actually does not have an O-ring. It has an interlocking seam around the outside. So it's not rated for pressure from all directions, but it is rated from water ingress from being dropped and picked up from a puddle or something like that, or splashing, rain, anything like that.
Right, it's not going to hold up to a boating accident, basically, is what you're saying.
Exactly, you don't want to go scuba diving with it. You'll have a very wet gun at the end of the day.
Right. Now, as far as it is the way that it regulates internally when it's closed, I know I've seen before, and I actually had this happen to me. We come back from a we got drenched one time. Went to a Sporting Clays event, a charity Sporting Clays event, and man, we had just got finished with the last stage. We were about 2 miles from the vehicle, and I'm talking about the bottom fell out. And of course, everything was getting soaking wet, and wiped everything down as best we could. Of course, put them in the cases, put everything in the vehicle. And man, when we got home, there was massive amounts of cleaning that had to be done. It was already the oils in the on the shotguns were, of course, that brownish color, and I mean, you was already starting to get surface rust and all kinds of things. As far as the way the cases, something I've always wondered about firearm cases is there something to do with the foam or the design, or does it have to do specifically with that, with an O-ring or anything like that, that helps regulate temperature and moisture and stuff like that within the case itself?
What you run into is with that O-ring seal, if it's waterproof from the inside, it'll also be waterproof on the inside. Okay. And airtight. So whatever moisture or humid air gets into the rifle case when you close it will remain there and can't escape, essentially, until you open it again.
Gotcha.
And that's just because of the way they're designed. There's no way I can think of to get around that, mm-hmm. except with desiccant or dehumidifier, drying the case out when you're done, stuff like that.
Sure. So you just want to make sure everything is good and dry. And obviously, in my case, you know, we wiped them down and did as best we possible, but there was water in the internals, and or rain had gotten in the internals and everything else with as bad as they were soaked. Plus, you know, you're talking about wood stocks, and so they're going to absorb some of that moisture too. So, yeah, that makes sense. Moisture in, moisture out, basically.
Yep, exactly. A friend of mine actually mentioned that when he looked at one of my cases. So he had SKB, I think, and it was snowy. He was on hunting elk. Threw his rifle in the case. I think some snow got in there, and he closed it and threw it in the closet for 6 months.
Oh, not
he came
good.
Out, you know, to clean it, and of course it was all rusty and pitted. And you know, after that, he bought some desiccant, and there's a lot of desiccant in that case.
Right. Yeah, he'll solve that problem.
Exactly. Yep.
So, let's jump into. You've mentioned that guitar case a couple times now, and I know y'all've run into some issues over there on Amazon. I'd like to certainly hit on that, but first let's talk about that guitar case for a while. How long have y'all offered that one?
Off the top of my head, I'd say a year and a half. I'd actually have to go back in the paperwork and see when it actually first got listed on Amazon, mm-hmm. but it had been an idea for probably 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It seems like 5 years ago, I actually built a violin case for my PS90.
Nice.
I have a SBR PS90 with a suppressor I bought from a guy up by Missoula, Montana. But I always want a violin case for it because I saw a cool guide online, and it's a nice, discreet case. Fits perfect. And that project actually turned out really well. So then the idea kind of came to mind, how can I present this to the public in a way that'd be easy to use and offer the same benefits? Because going in, cutting your own foam, you know, lining it with felt, doing the whole project yourself was probably a 5 to 7 hour project.
Wow.
And if you enjoy doing that sort of stuff, it's fun and it's a good experience, but for, you know, if I was going to do it for all my rifles, there'd be no way. I'd want something I could buy off the shelf, pluck, and it'd be good to go.
Gotcha. Now, as far as dimensions on that on that guitar case. Is it, you know, if you set that down with other, I know there's different size guitar cases, of course, but it mixes in well, it blends in well. Is it a pretty standard size?
Yep, no, it's based off one of the more popular designs. It's 42 inches high and 17 inches wide at the very bottom. Other than the logo that we've put on it, you wouldn't tell it's any different. And even with the logo, you'd have to take a really close look at it. It says Cedar Mill, but in very fine print, it says Fine Firearms. You'd have to be within a foot of the case to even see that.
Right, gotcha. Cool. Well, so don't... Don't take your rifles or whatever to your concerts and let your roadie mix them up.
Is what yeah, exactly.
Be very careful with that. You don't. Yeah, that could be a bad day. You might lose a rifle that way.
You might lose a rifle, and you might have a guitarist that's a bit irritated.
Right. Exactly. You might come out some of the prices on some of the guitars nowadays, you may actually come out better, though.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, lose a $1,000 rifle and gain a $5,000 guitar, so that could work. very, very cool. Well, I want to ask, and this will lead into, of course, the Amazon thing, but overall, the reception that you've got, the interest in the guitar case, pretty good overall.
Yeah. If we want, we could start from the beginning with Amazon, if you'd like.
Sure.
So what actually happened is Cedar Mill Fine Firearms, like I said, was about 6 years old, but it hadn't done much in the first 3 years. About 3 years ago, I started a prospecting company selling gold prospecting equipment online.
Interesting.
It appeared to be a huge niche. There's not much availability online, so I thought I had a real winner there. Well, I come to find out the reason there's not much availability is the demographic of people interested in that equipment don't shop online. So completely missed the demographic. At the time, I was building a little amplifier that works with one of the metal detectors to help increase the volume and the quality of sound that comes out of it, but long story short, I needed a plastic case. Mm-hmm. Bought plastic pistol case to house this equipment, and I think they came in cartons of 24, so I listed the rest on Amazon. A week or two later, I was sold out on Amazon. I kind of scratched my head and thought, well, maybe I should switch my target here, and then I reintroduced the Cedar Mill Fine Firearms name and started building that company off of this case, and that's when we actually started getting into e-commerce with Cedar Mill Fine Firearms.
Okay.
That pistol case started getting those into the warehouses and shipping those off, and they just kept selling better and better and better. Then we expanded into the rifle cases, a few other cases, and built up enough. Let me give it a moment here. I apologize.
No, you're fine.
I can't think of the word I'm trying to say at the moment. But anyways, that gave us the opportunity to start experimenting with these guitar cases and seeing if this would be a viable product for sale on e-commerce.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So in the time, you know, we sold several AR-15 parts, gas blocks, stuff like that. Found out that Amazon really doesn't like that type of stuff, so
yeah.
Ended up kind of stuck with a bunch of inventory at Amazon warehouses that they delisted, so we had to get it sent back to our warehouse and list it privately. And, you know, it was kind of frustrating because they'd been on Amazon for 6 months and it hadn't been a problem till all of a sudden they pulled the plug and that was the end of it.
Yeah, and that's one of the problems when you're dealing with, and I'm sure that's something we'll dive into a little bit here later on, but when you're dealing with these big websites and big platforms and big companies, and, you know, it's one of those third-party type things, is you're bound and beholden to them changing the policies on a whim, you know, just overnight.
Yep.
And completely unraveling everything that you've done. And
Amazon, we found that it not only comes down to them changing policies, but their interpretation. depending on who you get on seller support, they might have a prejudice against firearms in general, so there's just no getting through. Right. Whereas you talk to a different representative and they understand the firearms industry, they understand Amazon's policy, and they understand whether or not you actually violate it and what they can do to help.
Right. Yeah. And I've run into that being you know, Amazon affiliate, Amazon partner. I know I run into that. When I first got signed up with them, I a month or two, I guess, into that, I got an email, and it said, "Hey, you've been deleted from the program."
You know? Yeah, that sounds about right.
And I'm like, okay, what happened here? So I went in and contacted the support and got a really, really nice guy. I don't remember his name now, but contacted them, and he's like, "Oh yeah, you did this," and I'm like, "Well, what? I don't understand that." You know, it was one of those complicated things where, you know, he was interpreting it differently than I was, and I said, "Well, I thought that meant this," and he's like, "No," he said, "this is the way that it's enforced." Basically, is what he was saying. He wasn't necessarily he was understanding of, you know, how the miscommunication or whatever happened on my part, which was great. He wasn't agreeing with the definition or the interpretation of the policy. He was just saying that's the way they do it. And then he actually helped me get, you know, set up a new account and get reinstated and all of that. And luckily ever since then, and I know that the people I'm dealing with, of course, is different than the people that you would deal with, but luckily ever since then, I tell people this all the time, I talk to the support on that side with Amazon probably at least once a month. And so far, I've gotten nobody that was unfriendly, biased, you know, that sort of thing. Most of the time, or all of the time, actually, they've been very, very helpful. So.
Yep, and I think it depends a lot on which side you're in. I've noticed that there's several different approaches to Amazon selling. If you're familiar, there's a vendor program and a third-party selling program called Seller Central. Mm-hmm. Vendor's great, usually American-employed support staff, but on the seller side, it's usually Asian-employed.
Oh, okay.
So then you run into a whole different side there because, well, in Asia, they don't have firearms.
Right, yep.
So they don't even know how to interpret these policies because they don't even know what they're referring to half the time.
Right. And I got into this. I had, I've got a, like a social media site that is set up, and occasionally I've got to go with some overseas support to write some code and, you know, do some tricky little things like that on the programming side. And, yeah, I've run into that too because I've got to have things certain ways to get around or to work within, like the iTunes policy on a mobile app or the Google policy, the Android policy on a mobile app or something like that. And, yeah, they don't grasp. You're absolutely right. They don't deal with firearms on a regular basis, so they sort of don't grasp the – that there's a bias out there in a lot of facets of the country, unfortunately, and a lot of these big companies, there's a bias there. And when you're dealing with those Asian, be it support or tech or whatever, because that's not a part of their life and community and culture and country and whatever, then they don't understand how to work with you sometimes to play within those guidelines properly. So.
Exactly. One example would be much of the policy on Amazon is against assault weapons. What is an assault weapon?
A hammer.
I mean, specifically when you get down to even within the firearms community, the specifics on assault weapons is just left up to interpretation.
Right. Well, and, you know, for me, it's even deeper than that. And I know we're going to get off on a little bit of a tangent, but that's totally acceptable in my opinion here with this subject. But it's a little deeper than that even with me. You don't even have to put assault in front of it. Even weapon is, you know, what are you talking about? I can remember years ago I got pulled over, and I don't even remember what for. It wasn't speeding because I don't speed, and it wasn't a seatbelt because I wear my seatbelt. But there was something. It was a tail light, or it could have been the radio for all that. That was back in my younger days, and I remember the officer coming up, and And I did. I mean, I had a rifle under the seat. That was before we got concealed carry and all that here in Texas. But I did have a rifle. It was in a once upon a time they made a seat cover with a rifle scabbard basically in it. For bench seats in a pickup.
My dad had one of those. Those are a great seat cover.
Yeah. And so anyway, I did. I had a lever action rifle in there. And of course, country boy. I had knives and I had other stuff. And he comes up and he gets my license and he tells me why he pulled me over and all this. And he asked me, he's like, "Do you have any weapons in the truck?" And I'm like, "Can you define weapon?" and he kind of acted throwed back a little bit. And, and he's like, "Do you have any guns?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I've got a, rifle. It's down, below my legs down there in the seat cover." Explained that to him. "Is it loaded?" "No, it's not, it's not loaded." He's like, "Okay, just leave it there, not a big deal." And he's like, "I've never had, once he got done, I got a warning." And he come back and he's like, "I've never had anybody come back with that before. Most time they just say no, or whatever." And I'm like, "Well, you got to understand." I said, "There's a tire tool in the back, and there's probably a brick in the back of the truck. And, I said, so that could be a weapon if I wanted to use that as a weapon, right?"
Mm-hmm.
Like, there may even be a baseball bat back there.
Yep. I've traveled to Europe and to Asia, and what they call a weapon in Japan is a samurai sword, a knife. Even a good steak knife would be considered a weapon to them.
Wow.
Here in America, it's a completely different classification, different interpretation of what weapon is.
Right. And what's crazy, I was thinking about this the other night in relation to that, and I was thinking about weapon, and, you bring up sword, and that's what caused me to remember this, but I was thinking about that, and I was thinking, a firearm is a tool. It really is. It has so many different uses. Mm-hmm. A knife has so many different uses. Baseball bat, maybe not so much. A tire iron or, some type of wrench, maybe not so much. But it has, there's multiple things you could use it for. A hammer certainly has multiple uses, or an axe. And I got to thinking, and I thought, as far as a utilitarian use, if we're talking about a true weapon, is there one for a sword?
Shockingly enough, my heritage is Dutch, so I'm a bit familiar with the Netherlands. The Netherlands has a very strict firearm weapon policy. The last time I looked into it, Amsterdam was banning golf clubs, wow, knives longer than 6 inches, and baseball bats as weapons.
Wow.
So in the city of Amsterdam, if you're seen with one of those, you will be arrested for carrying a weapon.
Well, what do they do with, sports teams or stuff? Or is it, you have to,
if you get a permit.
Yeah, do you get a permit, or is it, if it's in within context, in other words, if you have a couple of baseball bats and a glove and a ball and they're all in a gear bag, is that acceptable, so long as you're not walking around just holding a bat?
Yeah, as long as, are you on the street or are you in an alleyway? Is that the differentiating factor,
Right, yeah. It has a lot to do with anytime you talk a weapon, and certainly assault weapon, because that's assault is an action. But even when you simplify it with weapon, you still go back with the, what's your intentions with that?
Exactly.
Particular...
It comes down to the person using it.
Right, exactly.
Are they assaulting somebody, or are they hunting for food?
Sure. So that sort of plays into this Amazon thing. And I'm gonna read this. You gotta, and we'll talk about this, because I'm not happy about this. For several reasons, and I did put earlier. I went in. I had to reply to that. I had to put a comment under this, unfortunately. But you've got a review now, and understand, when I think of review over there on Amazon or anywhere else, I think of somebody has purchased this, right? Somebody's bought this. They've used it. it holds up great, it does what they need, or maybe it doesn't. Maybe it fell apart for them, and so they write a bad review. Totally understandable.
And that's the purpose of the Amazon review system.
Right.
To get feedback from the people who use the products on how it works, how it performs, and what they think about the product.
Yeah, but this particular one, it's blatantly obvious that this person did not purchase the item. They are using this as a political stage or a political stomp or whatever to try to make a point that they're not really making very well. Just for those that are curious, I'll read this, and then I'd like to talk about this for a second, because there's some bad information in here. There's some bad thinking going on, I think, in this particular one. But this
it's definitely biased.
Right. This review says, I know this will get deleted, but for the editor about to delete my post, he doesn't even know how to type proper English, apparently, or I'm not going to assume gender. It may not be a he, so let me take that back. They. but he says, I'll read it verbatim here. He says, why are advertising items that let people covertly march around in public with potential weapons of mass destruction? ? Let these companies advertise in gun magazines. Get back to selling good, peaceful widgets. Guitar cases? ? Good. Walking around in public hiding your AR-15? ? Bad. There. I had my say. So it looks like this was just a troll that is out there and wanted to have his say. The sad thing that I found with this, number one, like I said, it's not a review. And I don't know, you would think in today, we're living in 2019 with all this technology, you would think Amazon would have a way that they could lock reviews down to where it had to look through your Amazon membership or whatever and see that you purchased that item. Otherwise, it wouldn't let you review. I would think that would be the way that it should be. Unfortunately, it's not that way, apparently.
Yep. So we've ran into several issues, not with just this product, but others. You can actually go on to any product and write a review. There's no regulation on whether you own the product or not. Now, if you look at the other reviews posted on the product, I believe every single one has a verified purchase underneath the review name, which tells you that the person writing the review has actually purchased this, whereas this review that we're talking about right now has no verified review. There's no verification that he even owns a product. Obviously, by what he typed, I would suspect he doesn't.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And what I find funny, looking at this, there's a little line down there, too. Apparently, there's a button there that I'm looking at. This is helpful, and I guess if you find that comment helpful or whatever, you can click that. But it actually says one person found this helpful, so I don't know.
And you know, I need to fess up here. I tried to hit report abuse, and I clicked the wrong button.
Oh, is that what it was? Okay.
That's what it was, and I can't take back that.
That makes me feel
saying it was helpful.
That makes me feel a little better. That makes me feel a little better, because as uninformed and wrong as I think this particular individual is, I'm thinking, okay, the person that found this helpful may even be worse.
Yep, so that's on me. That's my bad. Going back to the reviews, Amazon in the past few months has made huge strides in trying to regulate reviews. They've removed millions of solicited reviews and inaccurate reviews, and they've actually set it up now where I don't think there's an auto-approve system. Whenever you submit a review, from what I've seen, it takes a day or two for someone to actually look at it, read it, and then either approve or deny it.
Gotcha.
That being said, this was written March 14, so it obviously went through that process and was still approved. Not a verified buyer. The post is definitely biased, and to be honest, it's more of a post than a review.
Right.
If we go back to Amazon's review guidelines, it says that they prohibit content posted intentionally as sarcasm, especially as it relates to self-harm or harm to others. Now, self-harm, harm to others, whatever, but this is intentional sarcasm, and it's intentionally not a review.
Right. Right.
So with that in mind, I actually brought this up to seller support. I said, here's the deer. EOS Tower violates your guidelines. Here's the problem. I've done this about 3 times now, and every time Amazon comes back saying that they see nothing wrong with this and that it's perfectly acceptable, therefore they can't remove it.
That's weird. With the,
that's shocking to me.
Yeah, with the strides there. I mean, it's not in the sense of they're a big company and they could, of course, do whatever they want according to their, you know, biases or agendas or whatever. But it's shocking to me, since they are making strides to try to remove other things and whatever, and then they continually overlook this. But you know, in looking at it, I'm not sure. I mean, it doesn't need to be there.
No, it's not helpful.
But
it's not informative. It's a political rant, in my opinion.
Right. But I think that, I don't know. I mean, depending on who's looking at this, I mean, this guy's equating, you know, an AR-15 rifle to a weapon of mass destruction, really? I mean, you're equating a AR-15 to a dirty bomb, a semi-automatic rifle, okay, to a dirty bomb or a nuke or a chemical weapon? Really? Is that what you're doing? And even if you're doing that, those things can be hidden in suitcases. So,
exactly.
You know, what's the point? So I just don't. I don't know. I mean, it seems. It kind of speaks to the ignorance of a lot of people, and I don't mean that in a derogatory way. You know, I try to look at things big picture as a whole, and I see comments like this, which is exactly what this is, and I see things like this, and the ignorance stands out, and that's not a bad thing. And if you look at big picture, this is probably an individual that, you know, only watches news from a certain channel. You know, they probably live in a more urban area. They've probably never seen in real life, you know, an AR-15, let alone been to the range and actually experienced not just the firearm itself, but the camaraderie, the safety, the education, the community, and everything else that goes on that we know within the firearm community to be true. They've got no life experience when it comes to this. They're basing their opinions solely on what other people are telling them, you know.
Yep.
And they act so high and mighty about it, which is it's astonishing.
I've seen this before, and I'm sure you have on Facebook. It's stuff like this is pretty common, and Facebook as a platform is more suited for because you can say what you want on Facebook.
Right.
I mean, everybody's opinion is their opinion. And like you said, the majority of posts similar to this are from people who've never shot a gun in their life, and they watch maybe CNN, who knows, and just have a skewed perspective of firearms in general.
Yeah. And it's, you know, that's, again, that's what we mentioned first, and I think that's what's bad about this. So, you know, for anybody out there that is shopping Amazon, the danger here that I see is not so much the comment, right? To me, anyway. Because if you've got somebody that's on Amazon, they're looking for firearm cases. Oh, well, look at this one. It's cool. They're probably within our community, right? They're probably a gun owner. They probably use firearms. When they run across this, they're kind of going to have the reaction I have. Well, this is ignorance. This guy's silly. This don't belong here. But the danger, I think, with Amazon allowing crap like this to go on is they're watering down their overall rating, because you've got the star rating, right? And him doing a 1-star affects your average. And if you've got people that are just blowing through looking for, you know, the product with the most stars, and they're not actually parsing the reviews, or even, you know, maybe looking at the lower reviews. And I almost always do that. I think I'm in the minority by doing that. But I'll often look just to see, because most times, you know, 1 or 2 stars on something, if you go and you look at that review, it's either a totally unrelated comment really to the product like this one is, or it's a nitpicky thing, or maybe something that, you know, abuse or something that that person's done, right? He's like, I took this guitar case and I threw it off a 12-story building and it didn't survive. Well, duh, you know. Yep. Something like that. But, yeah, the danger, I think, is with lowering that overall star rating. You would agree with that, right?
Well, yeah, exactly. And what it comes to, the particular problem is with newer products, they don't have a star rating. And even this product has 16 stars. So one star rating has a severe effect on the overall star rating.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So when you go into Amazon and say you're looking for a guitar case, you go sort by, you know, the best rating first, you know, somebody who put this one star rating on here that's not even related to the product will force the ranking for this guitar case lower, and there's no reason for it. It's manipulation in ways.
Yeah, it is. And it speaks to the thinking of people, like, you know, this particular individual, you know, obviously didn't buy the product, would have no intention of buying said product. So why was he looking at said product in the first place to put a review on it?
So, exactly.
You know, you start digging down and it makes you wonder, you know, is this something potentially that can be a problem for people that do firearm related stuff in the future? I don't know.
You know, on Amazon, it's really shocking. Being in the business, I understand it a lot better. But say a Pelican case. If you look up a Pelican case, you can buy it now, add it to your cart, everything's good to go. What a lot of people don't understand is, say, for one of Pelican's more popular rifle cases, there's 32 different sellers, you know, at that point in time trying to sell that case. Mm-hmm. Now, what Amazon has is the buy box, and what they do is they rate each one of those 36 sellers based on their reviews, ratings, and price. Per their algorithm, depending which seller has the best performance, they get what's called the buy box, and when you click buy it now, you buy from that seller. Mm-hmm. That being said, there's an incredible amount of competition out there for winning that buy box and for product placement in Amazon. And Amazon's had horrible problems with people manipulating reviews on competitors, manipulating their own reviews, and even manipulating seller feedback just to help get a foot in on this buy box and search ranking foothold.
Right. Wonderful capitalism at work, I guess, as some, yeah, some would say, I guess. mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's good stuff. And again, for anybody out there that may be shopping on Amazon, I do employ you to definitely dive into. I mean, if you see, you know, lower ratings or something like that, definitely dive in and see why they're there. Because I would certainly want to know, whether it's in the comments of this podcast below or you shoot us an email, media@clovertech.com. You know, I would like to know if there's more of these out there. It would be interesting to look at those and kind of see what's going on, and because this was fairly recent, so
this was, and within a week I had another comment in a different part of Amazon, which was again a political motivated skewed perspective,
right,
that was improperly classified. I think that one was as a product question,
right?
So it seems in this case to be a trend that I'm of course concerned about as a seller, but even as a user, if people are allowed to continue in this trend, it's going to throw the metrics off in Amazon, and when you search for, say, a rifle case, there's only going to be one case that comes up because,
sure,
review manipulation, so on and so forth.
Yep, exactly. And you know, the dangerous thing is, and a lot of people don't think about it. You know, they may not be a gun owner, may not be a firearm owner, they may not be a part of the community or sell those types of products, but you know, what you've got to understand is the way that these different platforms and websites work. They work off of AI. They work off of algorithms. They work off of computers that, you know, gather all this data and compile it and put it together. And you may sell, as this guy mentions, peaceful widgets. I'm not sure what a peaceful widget is, but you may be out there and you may sell a peaceful widget. But for whatever reason, you know, it gets caught up in the chaos, and the next thing you know, you're affected by this because they're out there manipulating these algorithms and these AIs and all this other stuff. So this is a thing to where, you know, free market needs to work the way a free market works. If you, you know, I don't, and I wouldn't have a problem if Amazon wanted a straight up comments section, you know, I wouldn't have a problem with that. I mean, you know, free speech all the way. If you want to have a comment section, that's fine. But in this particular case of yours, yeah, it's totally wrong to be able to allow an actual review that is nothing more than just a biased comment against the product. So.
Yep, and as you said, capitalism at its peak, Amazon, as my opinion, is a capital engine. What they have is called the A9 algorithm, which is an AI of sorts. Basically, it's they've referred to it as a flywheel effect. The more sales you get, the more traffic Amazon will drive to your listing. The more that traffic converts, the higher you will rank on that listing. The higher you rank, the more impressions you get. Then that feeds back into the flywheel. The more conversions you get, the higher you go up in the rankings, and it keeps working in that circle. And that's how you get the search ranking on Amazon when you put in any particular phrase.
Right. Wow. So we've got a very good education, I think, on Amazon today. So, yeah, definitely. Thank you for that, AJ.
Yeah, of course. It's interesting how it works and the method e-commerce is taking with AI, artificial intelligence, search engine rankings, everything.
Right. So, with that, I think we're kind of up against our time for this week, AJ. But before you go, if you would, if there's folks out there that want more information, that they're interested in some of these cases that you offer, even that that guitar case, which is pretty doggone cool, how do they get in touch with you guys?
They can definitely visit our website at www.cedarmillfirearms.com. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram. My business number is 406-282-1647. If you have questions, feel free to give me a call or send me a message. And yeah, I think that covers pretty much all the bases.
All right, good deal. And again, AJ, I want to thank you for joining us, man. It's been a great chat.
Yeah, it's been wonderful. And yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for joining in on another Firearm Friday. Don't forget to log on to clovertech.com. There you'll find our social media links, the blog, cool swag, and more. If you'd like to help support our projects and take advantage of some extra perks, you can do so over on Patreon at patreon.com/clovertech. Have a great weekend.